Support for Under the Radar comes from Wellwithall. Wellwithall believes that self-care is community care. Premium products crafted for your daily wellness, from sleep support to heart health to your daily regimen. 20% of Wellwithall's profits are committed to leading the fight for health equity. They won't stop until it is truly Wellwithall.
I'm Callie Crossley, and this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. And now for the part of the show we call Lanya. That's Creole for something extra. Whether you measure it by its politics, pubs, or people, Boston's Irish heritage is unavoidable. But its neighbor just north of the island is beginning to step out of its shadow. From bagpipes to the savory meat pudding haggis, local Scottish groups are making a push for more recognition of their distinct culture and history throughout New England. Next weekend's inaugural Not Your Usual Burns Night will honor Scotland's national poet with traditional poetry, song, dance, and Scotch whiskey in an effort to bring Boston's Scottish culture alive. Joining me now, Dr. Larry Bethune, Vice President of Scots in New England. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Also with me, Dr. Peter Abbott, New England's British Consul General. Thanks for joining us, Peter.
Great to be with you, Colin.
So I want to start because I have to say, I'm one of those people who just thought Boston's Irish, that's the end of it. So imagine my surprise to discuss that there is quite a vibrant Scottish community here, just for people who are geographically challenged, as some of us are. Scotland is 12 miles from Ireland at the closest points. You cross a sea to get there. And population-wise, as we have the census data, the Irish population is about 13.9% versus the Scottish population in Massachusetts, about 1.2%. Nevertheless, there's a lot going on here in terms of local connections. And at the center of it is Robert Burns, the national poet of Scotland. And wouldn't you know, Council General, there is a statue of Robert Burns right here in Boston for those of us who are kind of clueless about it. So that says it all in terms of presence of the Scots here in New England.
Absolutely. The statue, which was done by sculptor Henry Hudson Kitson back in 1920, was originally it was put in the Back Bay in the Fens, and then was moved to Winthrop Square in the 70s. And it was put back again in the Fens in 2019. I've been down there. It was surrounded by construction, unfortunately, for a long time. But it's a great statue of Robbie Burns and a great testament, as you say, to the connections between the Scots and New England.
So the Scots have been coming to North America ever since the Mayflower. Tell us personally your Scottish background.
So my grandmother on my mother's side was Scottish. She was a McGlashan, which is part of the Ross clan. And so it's lovely to feel that I have, although I was born in England, have Scottish blood running through my veins.
All right. And for you, Larry, tell us your personal background, your personal Scottish heritage background.
We arrived here in North Carolina in 1774. In fact, it would be 250 years ago this October. And all the time I was growing up till I was about 12 or 13, I didn't know anything about Scotland or being Scottish. My parents didn't talk anything about it, neither did my grandparents. But my grandfather's two aunts had a whole room full of our information. And they are the ones who drummed into me that the blood is strong. So they gave me our family genealogy and I started to trace it back. And I became Scottish about overnight. And now I'm a zealot, Scottish. I love all cultures. My wife's half Greek and half Russian, and I like everybody to celebrate their cultures, and so that's what we're trying to do here.
All right, so Larry, at the center of this, as we've said, is Robert Burns. Now, I had some vague recognition of who he was. I knew I'd learned about him in school, but you know, it was vague. So tell me why he is the national bard of Scotland, as some refer to him.
Sure. A little bit of biography so we can place him in time, I guess. He was born 245 years ago. So that's quite a while back in 1779, in a shire or county called Ayrshire on the west coast of Scotland. He died at the age of 37, which is pretty young. He was a contemporary of Mozart, to put it in context too, who also died at 35. So they had a lot in common, geniuses and early deaths. He was a poet and a songwriter. And I think that because his works celebrate Scottish culture and identity, and he wrote about the ordinary Scot and their struggles and their joys and loves, and his relatability and his empathy for the common people resonated with a lot of Scots and helped solidify his status as the national bard of Scotland. This also resonated here in the United States after his death, all through the 1800s, especially here in New England, and especially with the abolitionists and with the Scots that were here, because he wrote about people, regardless of their social status, their wealth, their religion, their political beliefs, and so on. He was on the level, an egalitarian.
Well, that says a lot. It also helped me be reminded, as I'm going to remind my listeners now, that we all know at least one song written by Robert Burns. Here it is, Auld Lang Syne. It's always beautiful. So I felt much more informed after I realized I did at least know one. Now, Peter, there are other famous poems that might trigger some memories for us that Robert Burns penned. Share that with us.
As well as Auld Lang Syne, which you've just played and which your listeners will be very familiar with, Robbie Burns also wrote poems like Tam o' Shanter and a couple of poems, odes to small domestic animals. He wrote To a Mouse and To a Louse as well. And he also wrote A Red, Red Rose. Robbie Burns is very famous for the poems that he wrote to women, to the many loves of his life. He was a very romantic man. And the poems he wrote to women are some of his most famous and very funny as well. He's a very funny poet. He doesn't take himself too seriously.
Now, as I understand it, Peter, he was a bit of a womanizer when you say he loved women.
Well, you can say that. I couldn't possibly comment, but certainly that's his reputation.
Okay. Well, now that we understand Robert Burns' centrality in celebrating Scottish culture in Boston, the reason we're having this conversation at this point is that there is a big celebration coming up next weekend, the 25th, and there will be what is known as Burns Suppers, when he is celebrated and all of Scottish culture is embraced around him at the center of the celebration. So talk to me about, Peter, about Burns Suppers and the fact that for the first time, your office has coordinated something called Not Your Usual Burns Night. So it's a little bit different than what's been done in the past.
Yeah, so this is the Burns Supper is really a very, very special occasion, and it is celebrated by Scots all over the world. I've been to Burns Suppers in the UK, I've been to Burns Suppers in Pakistan, in Portugal, and now, of course, we're doing a Burns Supper and a Cayley here in Boston. So the supper follows quite a sort of a strict format. It opens with something called the Selkirk Grace, and then they serve the first course, which is usually a soup. And that's either Cullen Skink or Cockaleeky soup, two traditional Scottish soups. And then you've got a bagpiper. We'll pipe in the haggis. And the haggis is really the centre of the Burns Supper. Haggis, I hope your listeners aren't eating, because for the faint of heart, it can seem a little bit disgusting, I have to say, but it is delicious when you eat it. A haggis, a traditional haggis, is made of something called a sheep's pluck. And that's the heart, liver and lungs of a sheep. That is cooked in onion and oatmeal and a whole range of spices, and then is sealed like a sausage in the animal stomach, in the stomach of the sheep. I think that is less traditional now. Your listeners might be glad to hear, but that is certainly the traditional way of making the haggis. So that is piped in on a dish with a bagpiper. And then whoever's the master of ceremonies will read Robbie Burns' address to a haggis, which is quite a long poem that he wrote, celebrating the haggis as the sort of the sausage, the pudding above all other puddings. In the middle of that poem, the person who's giving the speech will stab the haggis with a sword or a dagger or a knife of some sort, and then cut the haggis open. And then that is served traditionally with neeps and tatties. So neeps are Swede, tatties are potatoes. And then as the evening goes on, lots of whiskey is drunk.
That would be Scotch whiskey, just to be clear, right? Scotch whiskey.
That would absolutely be Scotch whiskey. And then towards the end of the evening, the toasts are given. And this is the other famous part of the Burns Supper. There is a toast to the immortal memory of Robert Burns. And then a man will stand up and give a toast to the lassies, to the ladies in the room. And then a woman will stand up and give a toast to the laddies, to the men in response. And both those toasts are supposed to be pretty tongue-in-cheek, pretty funny, pretty playing to stereotypes about women, stereotypes about men. And as I said, lots of people have had quite a lot of Scotch whiskey to drink by that point. So it gets pretty rowdy.
Now, before I dive into some of the points that you raised here, why is this celebration not your usual Burns night? Why is it different from what you've described as traditionally the traditional program?
Well, we're having a great Cayley, a sort of a modern twist on the Cayley format. We've got some great modern music. We're hoping to have lots of young people come out from across Boston and Cambridge and the region. It's going to be at the Crystal Ballroom in Davis Square. It's a great venue, and we're really excited about, you know, I suppose, bringing Robbie Burns to a new generation of young people across New England.
Okay. Now, back to you, Larry. Both Peter and you have been folks that did the address to the haggis, which is done in Scottish Gaelic. I have to say, I confess, never occurred to me that Gaelic was anything but Irish. So here I am being corrected. So this is Scottish Gaelic that Robert Burns, of course, would write in. And it's part of, as Peter has said, this address to the haggis. So before we say more about that, I just want my listeners to hear what the European YouTube channel DW Food has to say about haggis.
Cutting open a haggis is always a special moment. This Scottish dish of offal minced with oatmeal and spices and cooked in an animal's stomach is just as famous as Scotland's rugged countryside with its mountain peaks and lakes.
That says it all. So, Larry, I wondered if you'd give us a couple of lines of the address to the haggis that you would typically be making at one of the celebrations.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'm doing four of these over the next 3 weeks, so it's a good time for me to rehearse. After hearing Peter's description, I think it ought to be said that if you compared his description with the description of a hot dog, the haggis will win hands down.
Okay.
So you don't want to know what's in a hot dog either. You know, the romantic legend behind all this is that Burns was presented a haggis as an honor to carve while he was at some kind of a dinner in Edinburgh, and that he made up this address on the spot, which I think is more legend than anything else. But it's a pretty good poem to make up on the spot. I'm going to recite it, but I must say I'm not Scottish. I'm Scottish-American. And the reason I have to say that is because a lot of the Scots out there listening to this would probably say, what did he say?
Well, just give us a taste. We just want a little sample.
It's not actually Scots Gaelic. It's Lowland Scots. So it's a little bit understandable. There's eight stanzas. I'll give you one at least. Fair far your honest sonsy face, grey chieftain of the puddin' race. Upon the mall you tuck your place, pinch, tripe, therm. Weel are you worthy of a grace, as lang's my arm. Now, I usually have a translator with me to tell everybody what I just said.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. Now, is that part of what Peter is saying about drawing in a new generation of folks to appreciate the Scottish heritage and the celebration?
Now, that's something that I usually do because I find everybody just stares at me. So,
all right. Well, that's good. It's a good reason, too.
It's like going to opera for Wagner or something and you don't know German or something.
I'm just curious about how this draws in the young people, celebrating these traditions at the center of Scottish heritage. What are you doing to make it appealing to the young people who will, of course, pass it on?
Well, we're trying to brand it, I think, Callie, as well, as something you might have seen some of the social media adverts that we've been putting out. There's a sort of Andy Warhol treatment of Robert Burns' famous portrait, and I think that's the idea, is trying to make it a bit more lively, a bit more sort of relevant to modern day audiences. And there is so much in Robbie Burns that is just is really timeless. The haggis might not appeal to Gen Z sensibilities, maybe, but I think the music, the dancing, and as I said, the poetry, which is really, you know, these timeless themes of romance and love, and I think that will really appeal to the younger generation. I think the other thing we're trying to do, it's a little bit different this year, is marry some of the sort of a cultural diplomacy of Robert Burns and the Burns Supper with some economic diplomacy. So the consulate is bringing over a number of folks from Scotland. We're doing a number of roundtables looking at offshore wind and energy, investment and financial services, and looking at sort of driving up US investment into Scotland and promoting the Scottish economy as well. So that's a little bit of how we're doing things a bit different this time.
Okay. One of the things I learned in preparation for this conversation with you all is about the Ceilidh, which is a dance at a that is used at these burn suppers traditionally. And looking at it, even without reading anything about it, I thought, this looks like square dancing. And it turns out that when I read something else about it, there is a person who calls the dance. So it sounds very much like square dancing. And there's even some do-si-do, which is, as we all know, part of square dancing. So that was pretty interesting. First, let me play a clip of people doing Ceilidh dances at a traditional Scottish wedding. Larry, did somehow this get Americanized, or was it always so? The Ceilidh and its form and how the calling of the dances, all of that? Or did Americans steal from the Scottish? That probably is what happened.
Of course that's what happened. The Scots are always having things stolen from them. But I did trace traditional music from the 18th century into colonial America and up through modern pop music. So in doing that, I learned a lot about how the Ceilidhs influenced square dancing. Now, they're not the only ones. Other cultures had similar kinds of calling and response dances and everything. But the Ceilidh and the square dance are very much, my family down in North Carolina doesn't know much about their Scottish history and didn't know anything about the connection of the two. But if you go to a Ceilidh and if you go to an American square dance or a hoedown, it's very, very similar, if not the same.
Interesting. I was fascinated by that. You know, all of these, some of these cultural traditions merge and we know nothing about it. So, which hence the reason to have these kinds of conversations. One of the things I was interested in is that you recently named New England's Emerging Scot of the Year. What does that mean? How does one become New England's Emerging Scot of the Year?
Yeah, so this is one of the categories of awards that the New England Scots have set up in their awards. And it went to a young lady called Iona, who's just doing amazing, amazing work promoting Scotland. She arrived, I think, a few years ago, but she's what they call a social media influencer now. And she has been using social media channels to promote Scotland, to talk about Scotland, to translate Scotland, I guess, modern Scotland for New Englanders. And she's really, I think, epitomizes what the award is trying to celebrate, which is a new generation of Scots coming into New England and celebrating things about modern Scotland, you know, focusing on the traditions, but also talking about modern Scotland. So Iona is exactly the kind of emerging Scot that I think the award is designed to celebrate.
Okay, Larry, weigh in.
Yeah, I think what's great about this as well is it's a brand new award, and Scots in New England, what we're really focused on is coalitions and alliances. We don't really try to create anything just by ourselves. We don't want to compete with anybody. So this was a beautiful experience of the British Council, the National Trust for Scotland and USA, Scottish Development International, Scots in New England, New Hampshire Scot, et cetera, coming up with these awards to draw more attention to the Scots in New England. And I think it was a highly successful first time out. And it was we had a great party, and everybody was happy who got the awards. There were three types of awards there. And we think it's going to be great in the future to sort of ferret out all the Scots in New England that are doing wonderful things.
If you're just tuning in, this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley, and I'm speaking with Dr. Larry Bethune, Vice President of Scots in New England, and Dr. Peter Abbott, New England's British Consul General. We're talking about Scottish culture and history in New England. All right. So in conclusion, I'd like each of you just to give a personal and heartfelt note to our listeners about why each year we should be celebrating holding up Scottish culture in New England and how you feel about it. Just your personal take. I'll start with you, Peter.
Well, I think we should celebrate all kinds of folk cultures. And I think it's really important in our very modern sort of hyper-glossy kind of world that we think about these traditions that have been handed down by our ancestors from generation to generation. Robbie Burns principally is a folk poet, and in his poetry, he's encapsulated the spirit of the Scottish people. And I think that is a really good thing to celebrate over good food, good whiskey, good music, and its fellowship of the very, very best kind. And I think nowadays it's really, really important that we bring people together. And Robbie Burns is a great reason to celebrate togetherness.
Last word from you, Larry.
Yeah, so well, I'm a passionate Scottish American. For my personal journey, I've already told you about it. I have a deep appreciation now for my own heritage and culture. But I also love all cultures and learning about them and understanding them and experiencing them. And I think understanding my own better, I can understand other people's cultures a lot better too. I don't believe, even though we joke about it, I don't believe that being Scottish makes us better than anyone else. It might. No, I don't believe that. but loving my culture does love me, allow me to understand. I like going to the games, the parades, the festivals. And Scots themselves, by the way, are made up of many, many different cultures and ancestors. If you go by our DNA, we're made up of 10, maybe a dozen or 20 cultures. So there's no such real thing anymore as a pure Scot. And I feel we each have sort of built within us a desire to belong to many communities. And I think everybody ought to get out there and dig into their culture and then go out and find somebody else's and celebrate it and have a good time. Eat the food, do the dance, get with it.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you both for putting Scottish heritage and culture and the New England connection on the radar. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Callie.
Dr. Larry Bethune is the Vice President of Scots in New England, and Dr. Peter Abbott is New England's British Consul General. That's it for this week's edition of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. Listen to us online at GBH News or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on Twitter and Facebook to stay up to date with our programming. Under the Radar with Callie Crossley is a production of GBH, produced by Jesse Steinmetz and engineered by Dave Goodman. We're going out on a bagpipe tune inspired by Robert Burns' poem, A Man's a Man for a That, frequently played at the annual Burns Suppers. Listen again on Wednesday and see you here at 6 p.m. next Sunday for a new episode. I'm Callie Crossley. Thanks for listening.